This is that. It's like furious, funky prog hardcore.
All right, howdy do. This is Bad Boy Croy.
And my name is Garrett T. Capps.
And today on Looking for Trouble, we will be discussing Up on the Sun by Phoenix, Arizona's own The Meat Puppets. This album, their third, was the exciting follow-up to their cowpunk classic, Meat Puppets 2, in which they began their break from the confines of the mid-80s hardcore scene and began their venture into uncharted sonic territory. Many a hand has scaled the grand old face of the plateau. Some belong to strangers and some folks you know. Holy ghosts and talk show hosts are planted in the sand to beautify the foothills and shake. Up on the Sun continued that exploration with an even wider sonic palette and an arguably less on-the-nose country-influenced sound. So, is it a Trouble Country classic? Let's take a look at some tracks. Garrett T. Capps, what do you got?
The most troubled track, in my opinion, was Swimming Ground, track 6. I've heard the song before, but when we decided to dissect the record in this fashion, I listened to the record a bunch. And there were a few songs that kind of jumped out at me as ones that I wanted to be my pick. I don't know, this one and the song before it, both and the title track, all three of those songs, bam, rhythmic vibe hits immediately. They're like immediately catchy. It kind of represents what I now think of the band on this record especially. It isn't necessarily as zany as far as the structure of the song goes, which I prefer that in most of the music that I love. It's kind of more of like a pop rock song structure. It doesn't stop and run the other way. It just goes forward. And it has like the kind of country roots chord progression in the verses. And it has a chorus you can latch on to. And the guitars are all chorusy and psychedelic. And the bass is goofy as hell and funky. It's a dancing song like we were talking about. The lyrics jumped out at me, not because they were overtly poetic or anything, but you know, it did feel deliberate, like it isn't some abstract concept.
I would say the same thing as far as the lyrics on the album go. This is one of the few songs that I could quote lyrics from.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's like an idea that I feel like I understand about the...
And if the Meat Puppets were going to talk about their life in some relatively normal way, going swimming, like in Arizona or whatever, it just seems like a hilariously childish representation of the band, but you can definitely latch onto it. And for some reason, the line, everything was floating around, or like everything just floating around, like cracks me up. It's like totally just stoned out, like I'm going swimming. Everything is just floating around.
Best place I ever found. Wouldn't lose to any town. Was a little swimming ground. Everything just cool you say childlike, because the thing that struck me as someone who's recently had a child is that's one of the things about this record is it was all done post Kurt having kids.
That's right.
And they kind of cite that as like a big change in kind of the whole, their, all their lifestyle. They all lived in a house and just partied together, and now all of a sudden they're living separately.
I did watch some interviews at the time. It was a really funny interview on this like LA station. It looked like it might have been a public access show.
Good evening, I'm Bonnie B, and you're watching Video Wave. Tonight I'm talking to Kurt Kirkwood from the Meat Puppets.
She asked him if they were an Americana band, and he said, I think we're world beat.
Dare call your music Americana, or do you choose to call it something else? Are there other influences that would help us best categorize what the Meat Puppets sound like?
Categorization outside of rock and roll is hard. You know, it started with rock and roll, and then these branches began to grow. And I think that the proliferation of branches is going to become so dense that it really means nothing eventually. So I don't know. I think we're world beat, actually.
World beat? I like that. You guys can take over the world.
Awesome.
And then she also asked him about influences. Where does the roots stuff come into play? And he said that he was really influenced by Disney movie soundtracks.
Wonderful World of Disney.
For me, it's really great to hear that a band could put out arguably their best record right after having kids. That doesn't mean the end of putting out good records, so that's great.
Their influences are all over the place, and that's what's really fascinating about the band. I could hear Towns singing this song. I think that, you know, Towns has some very, very ambiguous tunes. There's one song I'm thinking of in particular called Two Girls. I got two girls, one's in heaven, one's below. One I love with all my heart, one I do not know. But all the verses are just like, to me at least, just super wacky metaphors at best.
All the swimming hole was full of rum and I tried to find out why. Well, all I learned is this, my friend, you got to swim before you fly. I got two girls, one's in heaven, one's below. Oh, one I love with all my heart, and one I do not know.
I've seen in multiple interviews Kurt say, well, I just don't really have a big record collection. It's like a thing that he says.
A lot of those bands in that era, I feel like, are really into, you're right, yeah, they're into doing that stuff in the interviews, you know? Like Minutemen talking about, like, we didn't even know about tuning the instruments. It was just like, I like tight strings, and he liked loose strings. And it's like, you listen to it, and you're like, that cannot be true.
I remember we started high school, and I was bragging to some guy about playing bass, you know, 10th grade. But anyway, I see this guitar, you know, with these bridge cables, and this guy sees me in the store, and he sees me, you know, tripping out on this. He goes, what are you looking at? I go, God damn, look at this thing. And he goes, well, I thought you were a bass player. I said, I am. He goes, well, that's a bass. And I said, oh, I know that. But I fucking didn't know that. I'd never seen one. It blew my mind.
And we used to sit there and, like, maybe play Smoke on the Water over and over again, you know.
One riff.
And it took about maybe two years before we figured that, you know, you have to tune together.
You know, the tuning the strings, they get tighter or looser. They said they didn't think it was a matter of tuning them. They just thought, like, some guys liked them loose and some guys liked them tight.
Just based on how complex.
The slacker vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they just got chops, and they just, like, shred in their own way. Like, they love prog rock.
Sitting on the park bench, I'm little girls with bad intent.
Jethro Tull, and they tour with Black Flag and like the Grateful Dead.
Trailed by 20 hounds. Didn't get to sleep that night till the morning came around.
This is that. It's like a furious funky prog hardcore. I know that of all the tunes on the record, kind of going back to what I was saying about it just being like a A to B song with no real zags, I'm not very musically theorized, but I could play that song. I could make a country version of that song right now.
It's country in its imagery and in its...
Yeah.
The world in which the album exists is like of the country.
Totally.
And this song would be probably one of the strongest arguments for that, I think.
It's a landscape of...
Yeah. Far away from any town or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like country swimming hole.
Well, that's all I know about that song. How about the song you chose, Croy?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I went with track number one, the title track, Up on the Sun. Up on the Sun. I chose this song because I love it. It rocks. It rolls. It honks. It honks. I think it's a great start to the record. I really like it in context of the big thing that people are talking about with these guys at this moment is the evolution. Like, holy shit. Their first album to the second album. And so they've kind of made this cowpunk masterpiece thing in the second record. And so maybe the assumption at the time would have been that they were now going to, of course, they're only getting tighter. They're only getting better. They're getting more complex. They're going to have an even like kind of shinier version of like the cowpunk thing from the second record. When this song kicks in, that kind of supports that idea. I think that you kind of, it feels like what you think they're going to do with record number three, which is like just an even more together, more interesting, kind of out there country cowpunk sound. And then within three tracks it's like completely somewhere else, you know. And they like just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, which is awesome. But this song is like, you could two-step to this song, no doubt, you know. It's like dancing, it's danceable, it's got a great groove. I just really like it. I think it's a killer album opener and
vibe setter.
But what I like about it is that it doesn't actually accurately set, it sets the vibe as far as the whole album just kind of grooves, but like the country thing gets like definitely comes and goes throughout the record.
Right.
To a degree. And the first record and Meat Puppets too, it's like all this kind of weirdo country stuff and then boom, hardcore song and then some country stuff and then hardcore song or whatever. And this album, like, it just kind of like grooves all over the place, you know. I mean, they really completely leave anything that sounds like country or hardcore or anything, you know. It's just like their own little groove. Yeah, it had become synthesized. That's exactly what it sounds like to me. It's like they're these kind of weird worlds they've been kind of just like hopping in and out of or something. Now they're just kind of like standing in their own space. And so it sounds like all that other stuff they were kind of still separating in their minds or something. The thing that I really like about this track, they're on SST and they're still watching kind of the codification of the hardcore scene into like this very specific look, sound, and identity. So it's kind of like not only are they getting more and more like open out there and weird, but like the scene they're a part of is like arguably getting kind of like less open and weird. Their kind of response to that is they're getting like antagonistic towards that, you know? So I think you've got to, like, at least in the context of this conversation and stuff, it's like you've got to be talking about the fact that they are on SST, you know, in the hardcore scene making music. A song, like, who knows what they would have sounded like if they weren't reacting against that stuff, you know? So they talk about being on tour with Black Flag and the fans just being like, play fast, play loud, play hard. And so their response was to play slower and to like kind of mumble instead of yell and stuff. And so this song they kind of reference as a song that they would, when the fans really started to get antagonistic, this is the song they would go into to be even more antagonistic back towards them. Which is I like that. Never in the snows, there's an ocean where the wind never blows, and if you see it closer than the finer points will show. Not too much more. It starts, the album starts with that song and you're like, oh yeah, another like rollicking cowpunk album. And then it gets all over goes all over the place, wherever they want to go with it, to the point that then they come back to that and they're like, see, this song doesn't even sound like that anymore. That it just goes to show kind of how, to me, like this idea of trouble country and what makes these, these kind of the tenuous connections with country music that a lot of the stuff, you know, hardcore country people would probably hear most of the albums we're going to talk about and not identify them to be country influenced at all. I might not even understand why other people would call them country. And all that takes is like, just kind of like a tempo change and some delay pedals, you know, like you said with Swimming Ground, it's like the song structure of country is like kind of straight ahead, you know, just a few chords, whatever, three chords in the truth, whatever. And punk music shares that same thing. And so I really love this idea that like fundamentally sometimes all you have to do is take guitars from distorted to clean, you know, yeah. It's like a tempo change and just a guitar tone change. And you've gone from punk to country like fairly easily with not all the time, but like a song, you know, a lot of the songs on this record, it's like they could have just been chugging out distorted power chords. It would have sounded totally different, but like just clean guitars just gives it a totally different feel. And it sounds country to me. There's like a million, like, you know, 22 minute like YouTube country documentaries. And if you've seen these, it's like, and they're hilariously bad, you know, it'll be like, just like brush over, like, and thanks to a, you know, a hard touring schedule, it took its toll. Ernest Tubb never spoke to his wife or children again, but he kept moving on and bringing joy to people across the country with, and you're like, wait, what happened to his family? Like never talking, but that's weird. Oh, but he continued to bring like, you know, like joy to the listeners around the country. But anyways, in one of those, there's this great quote from Waylon Jennings that I feel like kind of has, speaks to that idea too, where he says, it's a documentary about George Jones, and Waylon Jennings says, if we could all sing exactly the way we wanted to, all of us would sound like George Jones. And I like the idea of like personal country vocal stylings are just like the degree to which you fall short of sounding like George Jones, you know?
I have had many musicians or band leaders, and I have always had a hard time trying to tour and find a band that can bring the vibe on and off the stage. So it blows my mind that there's any band that can stay together and keep the vibe going on and off the stage. But yeah, it seems like to get that vibe, you really need to know the people you're playing with and what they're capable of musically. If you go way back with someone that's like seen life from almost the same perspective as you have, and then y'all get in the same shit and you form a band called the Meat Puppets and take a lot of acid, and then I can only imagine how like spiritually tight they are when we're talking about music.
But it's hard not to read into that with the Kirkwoods. I agree with you. I think that too, when people praise them for how complex and tight that stuff is. I'm like, well, they're brothers. But I don't know what that means. There's definitely something about family in which like it's a lot harder to fire family members probably. You know what I mean? That's why it makes them families, that you can hate each other for a long time and at some point attempts will be made to repair that relationship. Whereas when you have a bandmate who's just a random person you don't really like, you're like, well, I'm going to let this go too long and then I'm going to kick you out and never talk to you again, possibly. So, edit that out.
I was talking about my favorite book I've read this year, one of my favorite Doug Kershaw autobiography. It's a well-known story. It's kind of like the Louvin Brothers. Doug Kershaw, the Raging Cajun, was born on a boat in the bayou. He wrote Louisiana Man. He's setting traps in the swamp, catching anything he can. Gotta make a living, he's a Louisiana man. Gotta make a living, he's a Louisiana man. The muskrat hides hanging by the dozens. Even got a lady break a muskrat's cousin. Got him out drying in the hot, hot sun. Tomorrow Papa's gonna turn him in the mud. Him and his brother Rusty had a famous, or they were well known regionally before I think it was Doug that got the break. He kind of was like the crazy as fuck Cajun country guy.
Here's a guy who speaks well for Cajun country, the Louisiana man himself, Mr. Doug Kershaw.
In the mid to late 70s, like when Outlaw was going, Doug Kershaw was able to find a way in, and he was ambitious and his brother wasn't. So him and his brother Rusty like were literally born on a swamp boat and learned how to play Cajun fiddle and make money on the street for their mom and their family, and then they became regional sensations. But Doug went on to bigger and better things. But he talks a lot about the brotherly relationship and he sold the rights to his most famous song to bust his brother out of jail in Houston, and you know, that kind of shit.
There's jail stuff in the Meat Puppet story too. Pretty significant jail stuff that changed the course of that band's whole trajectory.
All right, we're going to be rating this album Up on the Sun by the Meat Puppets in terms of how much trouble it has caused, period. What do you think, Bad Boy Croy?
I think that I really, really like this record. Throughout the course of the last couple of weeks, listening to it over and over, I only liked it more and more and more. But I think it only caused a little bit of trouble. I'm going to put it on the mostly untroubled side of things. I certainly think that it represents a piece of the Trouble Country puzzle. I think it belongs in the conversation. I think it helps to kind of show how Trouble Country is a place that sometimes people just kind of pass through and experiment with on their way to exploring other things. But I don't find this album particularly troubling.
Fair.
Garrett, how much trouble has this is Up on the Sun by the Meat Puppets caused?
I'm not sure how much it has caused, but I was trying to think of a scenario of someone else getting in trouble that we could compare this album's trouble rating to. And it's very wild and weird. Okay, we're in San Antonio. Right down the road is the Alamo. Phil Collins is obsessed with the Alamo. There's like a miniature Alamo museum down there that is like his.
Phil Collins' private collection, basically?
Yeah.
Wow.
Apparently he comes down to San Antonio and stays at the hotel across the street and specifically gets a room for him where he can like stare at the Alamo. So I'm going to rate this album. When Phil Collins books his fourth trip to San Antonio of the year to go stare at the Alamo, however much trouble he gets in with his wife is how troubled this album is.
Oh, I love that.
It's a lot of trouble.
Is it?
That's so good. I love it. I just want to say on record that they describe this album as their beer and pot album. As a beer and pot guy, I appreciate that description of a record, and I like that. I want on record me saying that. So, the verdict's in. Up on the Sun by the Meat Puppets. Not quite a Trouble Country classic, but definitely a little bit country and a classic in its own weird lane. Well, now you know how we feel. What about you? Give us a ring at 512-710-6941 and give us your take on Meat Puppets Up on the Sun. Aside from the Meat Puppets' Up on the Sun, you can find a full list of all the tunes spun in this pod on our show page. We didn't get into all this trouble by ourselves. This pod was produced by Troublemaker-in-Chief Dade Hoffman, edited and co-produced by Clayton Price, with writing and production assistance by Josh Fiola. Circle back next week when we'll be talking about Camper Van Beethoven's Gypsy Punk Opus 2 and 3. That's the name of the album, 2 and 3.